What I want to do this week is try to tie up what we were discussing last week. However, I don't have a masaira on the subject, meaning, based on the things we discussed last week, based on the sources we've seen, we can guess as to how music is meant to fit into the picture of our Yiddishkeit today. But I don't want to say things just based on conjectures and sketchy ideas. Generally, the things that I teach are very much based on what I was mekabel mei rabbeisai, namely Rabbi Avigdor Miller. And music was one issue that he almost deliberately avoided, because he was very much from the school of thought that boil things down to the most real thing possible. He held that music has the potential to distract a person from the real thing, often can cause a person to feel like he's on a spiritual high, while actually deluding himself, because once again, music plays on the emotions. So he personally played down music in his teaching and in the shul. For example, in his shul, there wasn't singing. L'chadoidi, they didn't sing. Very unusual thing. They didn't sing l'chadoidi. They sang kel adon. That was the only thing they sang, because he said, we can't not sing anything. But l'chadoidi, even, they didn't sing. They chanted it. This was all part of his shita, that first make sure you're connected to it in a real way. Then you can enhance it with song. This was also based on the whole Slabodka approach. Now, this often came through in his teaching, that he felt that people turn music into something too much of an end in itself in terms of spirituality, as though singing in and of itself is a spiritual achievement, etc. And he often felt that he had to play that down. That was how he spoke explicitly. While at the same time, he would acknowledge the effect of music and its capability of helping. I remember one time, the Chazan Davin Musaf. Again, he didn't count him in singing by the Chazan, except Yom Neroim. There was even a Chazan one time who started singing Chadoidi, a guest. So he kind of motioned with his hand, no singing. The Chazan said, I don't know how to do it. Every single shul sings, except there was a special chant. There was a special tune that they used to chant it to. The Chazan didn't know it. So the Chazan said, switch the Chazan. But there was one time in Kedusha when the Chazan sang in Kedusha. Well, Kedusha, but it wasn't going to turn around. Afterwards, when he made his announcements after Shul, he gave a Yasha Koyach to the Chazan, and he said, such a beautiful Musaf. When he sang during Kedusha, I found myself weeping. So he said, some people in the Shul thought, oh, maybe that indicates a change of policy. They came over to him, they asked him, alright, does that mean that from now on? No, absolutely not. Yes, I enjoyed it, but the way I understood it, and the way he actually said it many times, like, for example, there was the other side of the coin. Just, he didn't want to stress that too much. He said once, for example, when he was talking about different methods of tshuva. So you have to realize that you don't always, of kibbutz. He said, there are the people you approach intellectually, but there are people that's just not what's not going to talk to them. It's not that their problem is that they have intellectual questions. Some people just need what he said. Sometimes when you're saving a person's life from drowning, you have to give him a knockout punch, right? Instead of reasoning with him to hold on, give him a knockout punch. He said sometimes in Kirov also have to use a knockout punch. A knockout punch is a good farbringen of Chabad with singing and the cake. That's sometimes a good knockout punch, meaning definitely recognize the value and the capabilities of singing, but yet he always steered clear of putting emphasis on it as avodas Hashem. And therefore, I don't have a masir in this subject. I don't have what to convey from my rabbi. So what I chose to do is, instead of theorizing, which is not my role, not my position, I'm not, anybody can do that. I'm not any more qualified than anybody else. I'm here to give over what I've learned. So I want to read, to really give the full perspective on this subject, this is a letter which I think very, very well encapsulates the practical perspective of singing, how it fits into our scheme of Avodas Hashem. This is a letter that was written by Rabbi Binyamin Sharansky, who is one of the elderly mechanchim of our generation, this famous the whole network of schools by now, girls' high schools that are under him.
Rabin, you mean?
Sharansky. Sharansky. Very known, elderly, mechanic, still operating at full steam. An elderly man by now. You know, already generations of girls have been through his chinuch. And he wrote a letter to his staff, laying down the approach to singing in the context of chinuch. And I think this very well encapsulates the whole perspective of singing in Judaism. So basically, I want to learn this letter. This is in order to complete the picture of what we began seeing last week.
What's the difference between singing and chanting? You say they chanted
l'chadabim. It was kind of like they said it. Just like, you know, just like Chazar HaSashatz is chanted but not sung, right? There's a certain melody to it, but it's not actually a song. They're like, not a song. So I want to read this letter, and that way I'm letting him present it to us instead of me trying to do that. I'm going to read it in English. I'm just going to translate it directly. It says, music and song is mentioned often throughout Tanakh, in the Gemara, in the Sfarim of our Chachamim. And they praise music very much, to the extent that there's a saying that, I believe that this comes from Kabbalistic sources, Heichal Hanigina Samuch LeHeichal HaTshuva, the sanctuary of song is adjacent to the sanctuary of tshuva. And we won't be wrong by saying that even according to our simple level, we can understand the connection between the power of music and tshuva. Because yes, we know that music does play on the emotions, and it inspires the emotions. It causes feelings of longing and of inspiration. It can cause feelings of Tzama Nafshi Lelekim, my soul thirsts for Hashem. And yes, when a person is singing songs of Kodesh, he can feel himself trying to raise above just the physicality and to cling to Hashem. It certainly does bring out these feelings. All of the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash was accompanied by the songs of the Levim, which awakened feelings of tshuva in the hearts of those who bought the Karbanis, right? We discussed this last week. It's to the extent that the Kuzari writes, this is also what we just saw, that it inspires people. It can cause a person to swing from one state to another. It can bring a person from sadness to happiness. It can bring a person from laziness and energize him to get him going. But now, the power and the influence of singing is such on a person's soul that the Rebbe of Javlin, I'm not sure who this is, Zimre Shol, used to say, a person who's singing for others or playing music is taking upon himself a responsibility. Because when a person is, when people are listening to music or to singing, their nefesh is now being put into the hands of the one making the music. He can bring their nefesh up or down. Everything depends on the person playing. The way he plays, how much he plays, the style that he plays in. The way that a person, the music itself, the song, can raise a person up to the highest levels, or can chas v'shalom bring a person down to the lowest. Now he says, the pious of the olden days, who wanted to ascend, and the Har Hashem wanted to ascend in the spiritual levels, would go out, they would seclude themselves in forests, in deserts, and they would sing the songs of David HaMelech before Hashem. Also the Nevi'im saw in music a very strong tool to inspire feelings of Kedusha and to bring about Hashras HaShchina. Like it says in Sefer Melachim, right? They used it to bring themselves to a state of meditation that can bring about Nevuah. It says about Elisha, when he wanted to attain Nevuah, it says that they bought a person with a harp, and when the person started playing, the spirit of Hashem came upon him. It also says about Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech suffered from a melancholy spirit towards the end of his days. So it says, yeah. So when this spirit would come upon Shaul, David would take the harp and he would play it with his hands, and Shaul would feel relief. He'd feel good, and the melancholy spirit would leave him. So you see that yes, music has the power to dispel stress, anxiety, sadness from a person's heart.
Maybe depending on what kind of music.
That's right.
You said earlier, I didn't understand it so good. Earlier we said that it puts you in a vulnerable place.
He's going to elaborate on that more. The power of song and music, just like all the other forces of this world, were never viewed by the Jewish people as a value in and of itself. We don't develop music or enjoy music just in order to satisfy our finer senses. We don't develop music just for pleasure. Rather, we see it as another element of the Bria, another force of the Bria, that's given to us as a gift mishamayim, in order to use it to facilitate, to enhance our tefillos, our requests before the Kisei HaKavod, and to use its notes to feel feelings of Kedusha, to connect to Kedusha, to put ourselves into happy states, to elevate ourselves. Like the Pasuk says, when it says in the Torah, V'sheves v'shem Hashem aleikav, he shall serve in the name of Hashem. What does it mean to serve in the name of Hashem? This refers to the Shira of the Levim in the Beis HaMikdash. Song is the pen of the soul. This is actually a quote from the Tanya. He doesn't quote it here. The Tanya said that the mouth is the pen of the mind. And song, speech, is the pen of the mind. That's where you articulate your intellectualism. Song is the pen of the soul. That's where you articulate the emotions pouring forth. And that's why so many of David HaMelech's praises and shiurs are given the form of song. Because you can to articulate emotions, you do through song. You use words too, but words won't bring it out all the way. In a way, it's a language of the neshama, through which you can express things that the 22 letters of the alphabet cannot express. Words have a limit. Song can add that spirit to them, can add that life to them, can add that added dimension. Can add much more significance to what you're saying. And he also cites from the Hakdama of Pasa Shulchan, which we cited last week, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, very much praised the field of music. And he said that many of the secrets of the Torah, and the secrets of the songs of the Levim, and the secrets of the Zohar, cannot be understood without music, helping to facilitate, to help you access exactly what's being conveyed, right? And he said, through music, people can die. When their souls so connected to an extent that they just are so inspired, people can die from it. It can also be used to revive the dead through the secrets contained in music that are contained in the Torah. And many melodies were actually brought by Moshe Rabbeinu from Har Sinai. So now, he says, however, it's only people who really know how to connect to music and who can really feel that inspiration, who can really appreciate its power and its effect. It's only those people, such people, can also understand and appreciate its potential danger. If it is created by empty people, people who are servants of their taivis, people who are just all the time busy with the Yetzer Hara.
Which would be our case now, because we don't have the tradition of what the music was, and most of the songs are adaptations of Goyisha music, which ends up in the shul, which the chazan, works around in the village. Oh. That's like a uninitiated person all of a sudden starting to learn Kabbalah and doing chants from Kabbalah, and one doesn't know what bad things, more like it's a 50-50 chance whether good or bad comes out of the music.
So you're making a very chashuv point. Music, depending on where it's coming from, will make a big difference. So let's see. We'll let him develop this. We'll see that there are a few levels to what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's the more blatant level, there's the subtler level, and there are other elements here too. Let's see. But that is definitely so. The music that is created by the wrong person is expressing the wrong things, is hitting the wrong chords in your nefesh, and you might actually simply be assimilating the spirit that he was singing in, which might be coming from very bad places. So let's see. So he says, yes, music is also the Ben Arambam writes this, perhaps this is what he's basing it on. He says music is essentially a sublime tool. But you can take sublime tools and drag them through the mud and turn them into very harmful things. Intellect also is a sublime tool. It's the most sublime tool we have. Intellect certainly did serve many destructive causes, although we know that that's what brought mankind to its greatest of heights. So you have to realize that with all of its great potential, the potential of abuse is there just as well. So he says, yes, they defile in a very coarse way the refined and delicate atmosphere, halo, that music actually has. When people compose a song which consists of a pasuk in a very rocky and a wild, frivolous sort of tune,
and that's all of music today with electric guitars and everything.
Okay, no comment. I'll let you draw your own conclusions. Which inspires people to what? Inspires them to just start jumping and getting frivolous and yelling in a very street-like manner. That is being mechalel the kedusha of a pasuk, of the pasuk. Because what is it really inspiring to? Using a pasuk to inspire people to just act with abandon. What's that?
My question still stands. All the music today is much louder than it was 30 years ago, and I know I've heard in shiurim rabbis who are not of, let's say, my generation, talking about this issue that in their generation, did, you know, someone in their 50s, that this didn't exist. Is that what it's talking about?
This is basically what he's saying. Saying that music has to have a certain sensitivity. Music reflects feelings, right? It reflects a certain spirit. And the question is, what is it just reflecting the spirit of? Just do it. You know, Rabbi Mill used to say, right? The famous, you see in t-shirts or whatever, just do it. So in Judaism, never just do it. Don't just do it. You have to think about it. But then there's the whole, you know, there's the whole atmosphere of nothing matters, just let loose, right? And there's music that expresses that. And there's music that causes that feeling. You see, it's true. You go to a Jewish chasana sometimes, and then they get into a certain mode. It starts with the nice old classic, you know, Yossi Salayach and all that. And then it goes into the more modern mode of music. And you see the effect. It manifests in the atmosphere. You see it in the air. You see it in the way that people start dancing. What is it expressing? It's expressing a certain abandon. Just, we say, prikas oil. And these are phenomena we should note.
Is it objective, or does it change from generation to generation?
I don't know. I'm saying that we do have to be aware of the issue. How exactly to apply it to each particular niggun, I don't know. But there definitely is a concept here. We're just discussing one element of it, and that is, what is this music arousing? What is it bringing about? Is it bringing, you have music that simply directly equals prikas oil? I don't have a good English word for that, but prikas oil.
Throwing off the yoke.
Abandon, yeah. Just let it all out, right?
So it seems more a critique of the genre of music than jazz. But okay, it's obviously talking about rock and roll or, what's it called?
Heavy metal.
Heavy metal or a trance type of stuff. Jazz, let's say. I'm trying to think, which is maybe par. Not that I don't think anyone's ever put a pasuk to jazz music, but can't there be just an appreciation? Forget about the lyrics, because he puts together a pasuk with a genre of music. Let's say you just have a genre of jazz without lyrics. can't there be an inherent objective appreciation to it?
Yeah.
The notes, the
well,
riffs,
again,
whatever.
Let's talk on two levels. We're saying in and of itself, an inherent objective appreciation, we're saying it's like anything else beautiful, as long as you know you can appreciate beauty and you can appreciate art and you can appreciate it without necessarily ascribing anything inherently valuable to it. Meaning, the point, regarding the point that you're bringing up here, I'll get back to what Avigdor Miller always stressed. You want to enjoy it, enjoy it, but don't call it spirituality. See, sometimes people, everybody understands that a bag of potato chips or a hot dog is not spirituality. But sometimes they'll tend to think that beautiful music is in and of itself. Right? So you want to enjoy, say I like hot dogs and I like music. That's fine. I mean, again, fine as long as the hot dog has the right hechsher and fine as the music is within certain bounds. How exactly that'll have to work, again, we'll continue developing that. But, yeah, inherent appreciation, as long as you realize what you're appreciating, as long as you're calling a spade and not attributing it, people sometimes turn, all of Yiddishkeit can just turn into singing and music. So you're right. Here he is addressing one specific element of it, and that is the beat, the style of music that really just expresses anger or whatever it is, I don't know, frustration, abandon, and we know what we're talking about. But the truth is, yes, it divides into different elements. Let's see. Because the truth is, there is also a lot to where the tune comes from. Although, here I'll note, and I'll say, a person who is on a level of absolute spiritual sensitivity, right, might feel a certain yirida, they might feel a certain sullying of his level if he would hear beautiful, gorgeous music composed by a good guy. Let's say, Beethoven. Okay? If you have a person who's a levy from the time of the Beis HaMikdash, for him, Beethoven would be a sacrilege. But we don't have to decide that that's our first area of avoida, to purge our homes of classical music, because at the end of the day, we're not on the spiritual level that we're so sensitive that Beethoven is what's going to make a difference in our spiritual level. Meaning, this has to be factored in as well. At the end of the day, the sources will tell you that, yes, the person, the composer's nefesh is expressed in the music, and it's actually affecting your nefesh, etc., etc. But in terms of, should this be the first, I remember I asked my Rebbe this. I was a very pious young man when I first got married, all full of pious idealism. And that was at the stage in life where I still knew everything. Since then, I forgot a lot of things. But at that point, you know, we had in the home, my wife will forgive me for telling the secrets, but she had the CDs of classical music. Some, you know, the old names from you know, Mozart and I knew about these different sources and like, you know, it expresses the nefesh of the composer and it's going to affect our nefesh. And I asked my Rebbe about it, Rebbe Folshim Levitz Amir, and he said, basically his answer was, if there's a problem with classical music, we're not at the level where, you know, that's what's going to make the difference for us. So therefore, although it might be true that inherently any music that's not from, coming from an absolutely kaddish source might be a certain sacrilegious on a certain level, but that's not what we're discussing here. We're discussing here things that even us, our neshama is on the level of being able to appreciate that this form of music brings you down. This form of music dulls your sensitivities. A form of music that just causes you to feel just, you know, nothing matters right now, and just to connect to whatever it is, the angry beat, the beat of abandon. This is what we're talking about right now. So, and it's especially sacrilegious, the Gemara already says, it's especially sacrilegious when this is done to Pesukim. What's the purpose? The purpose is the beat, right?
Why especially? Isn't it worth... I would think especially if you're listening to music like that without the Pesukim.
Well, it depends. If you're listening to music like that with bad words, that might be worse. Might be worse. If you're listening to music like that plain or with Pesukim, it's worse to listen with the Pesukim. The way the Gemara puts it is, you're taking the pasuk and using it as a musical instrument. this pasuk brings across this beat well. So what do? You took the pasuk down from what a pasuk is, and you turned. That's how the Gemara puts it. Asauni banecho kikina. Your children use me. It says that Chiyashirim constantly complains to Hashem. Your children use me as a musical instrument. There's a good beat. You need an excuse for a beat. The excuse for the beat is going to be this pasuk that works well with it. So now, here is a fine line to draw. If you're using the, if you want to focus on the pasuk, and this, the melody is going to cause you to connect to the pasuk all the more, and to internalize the pasuk all the more, go for it. But the question is, what's the other way around? The point is the tune. And the pasuk is a good medium for bringing out this tune. And that's where it can either be the way he's describing here, where it's mamish sacrilegious, where it's just mamish complete bizoyin to the pasuk, where, excuse me, we get a little practical. Baruch HaGever, right? The famous Baruch HaGever. It's also a pasuk from Yeshaya, which was put to a very, very rocky beat, which actually has sources from other places. There's a sacrilege there. But well, even, you're not coming on to that.
What about songs that don't have psukim? Songs that are just... Like Rebbe Nachman.
Wait. First of all, one point at a time. But then even songs that are not like that, that the tune is fine, but it's not like something you're really going to connect to. And you see that. I can give examples. I gave an example last week. I'm sure, you know, there's beautiful words. If we would sit down and learn Mishlei properly with the Mefarshim, we'd see. But simply understood, most people who are coming and sitting down to sing a song, and they're singing the end of Eishes Chayil. She opens her mouth with wisdom, the Teres Chesed Alushayna, etc. Are they really, by singing that song with a beautiful melody, connecting to the words and being inspired? What does a person who hasn't learned the Mefarshim get out of it? And there's also a very nice tune. I don't know where it comes from. A very nice tune to the words. The psukim of Shiloh HaKeh. When you come across a nest on the stones or in the tree, you shall not take the mother with the child with the eggs. Send off the mother and take the eggs.
There's a song like that?
There's a song. Beautiful melody. But I'm afraid that that's an example of...
Well, Tikkun Azor is based on that pasuk.
What's that? Oh, so the truth is, you know what? I definitely should make a disclaimer to what I'm saying and give them the benefit of the doubt that these people who sang this song and who came up with this song were coming from the perspective of the lessons behind it that I don't know, right? And that's when they sang it, they really felt inspired. I learned a lesson that way. I never understood. Shlomo Kalibach has a catchy tune. Avinisko Hashem Levadoi, Vayvoser Yaakov Levadoi. Right, you know, it's a catchy tune. And like, first time I heard this song, it seems to me like another case of. Then I suddenly saw a Medrash one day. It inspired me so much. Now I sing that song, and it really inspires me. It's a Medrash, not his idea. He didn't put the two together. It's a Medrash that says that ultimately the existence will be just us and Hashem. And besides these two psukim, one talking about Hashem Levada and one talking about Yaakov Levada. Ooh, you're taking it from that perspective. Certainly is inspiring. So, everything I said now, I'm giving a disclaimer that Klape, the ones who came up with these songs, perhaps they really were coming from a perspective of knowing the midrashim behind it, in which case it's great. But there is this concept to be aware of it, of what we call using music, psukim as an instrument. But here he's talking about even a lower level, when you're using the psukim as an instrument for what? For that whole beat, for that whole style of just abandon, wild. So now he says even people who are not big experts in music don't have a hard time discerning the wild and arrogant tones coming from this frivolous sort of song that really is just coming to satisfy more base desires and to just get you excited without any substance to it. Just excited, just wild, just jump. Right? The fact is that the language of music notes, just like the language of literary words, leaves an impact on the nefesh. It makes its impressions. And it helps shape the nefesh. Now, just like words of Musa, sublime words of Musa, coming from a pure heart, will inspire, so too, sublime music coming from pure feelings, these things can equally inspire feelings of longing for Kedusha in the soul of the one who's hearing it, and can draw a person closer to the truth, and can inspire feelings of Yira and Tshuva, and can bring upon a person longing for Hashem. Like the Kuzari said, what we saw a few weeks ago, if your excitement about Hashem's mitzvahs brings you to suddenly burst into song and dance, that song and dance is called Dveikus in Hashem.
What about the contrary? What about someone, let's say there's a song that always gets me about the Beis HaMikdash, but it doesn't make me happy, it makes me sad. Is that what it's talking
same
about?
Same idea. Too? Same idea. We are supposed to be feeling the missing the Beis HaMikdash. Right?
So it's a good thing.
Yes. Yes. That helps bring it home. It's a good thing.
Are there words in the Sukkim?
What's that?
What if there's Sukkim in there?
I'm saying, from what I heard, B'Shem Rishon Zalman, was that songs that, not just B'Shem Rishon Zalman, Shiras HaShpachas, and Mishnah Berurah brings it down, things that are inspiring a person to, things that you ought to be inspired to, are acceptable. So now, what's that? Oh, plenty of songs. Leif Tohar Broly Elohim. But again, this is subjective. Some people will be inspired by things, others. Right, but now I'm inspired by that song, Viniska Vashem Levada. Leif Tohar Broly Elohim, right? These are songs that connect to the words that can elevate you. So now, what's that?
Racham Mevakal Banera.
Yeah, songs that connect you to real things. So now, he says that yes, we have to understand that Lamaisa, music and song strikes a place in a person's soul or emotions. Just like music can detach a person from anxiety or from just the material and bring him to a place of elevation and purification. Dancing also can, person by a person jumping up and down, can bring a person to high places. When a person is expressing, is channeling his enthusiasm into those jumps, it can bring him to high places. And this is how the Piasetzner Rebbe writes in his Sefer Chodesh HaTalmidim. Just like you might take a garment and shake it off of the dirt and the dust, and the dirt and the dust falls, and the garment becomes clean, so too, you can do the same by jumping and dancing with enthusiasm for Hashem. You knock off a lot of your spiritual dirt, and your soul can become elevated and purified. The Byron of Kalin also said, dancing is a very great thing because it raises a person above the ground. I mean, literally and figuratively. And it could be that this is where the practice came from of the pious of yesteryear, to dance at specific times, dancing of Yira, of Ava, dancing which also brought people together, Avas Chaverin, feelings of Achdus, right? Music can help facilitate that, of holy enthusiasm. Maral says, when a person dances, it inspires joy. And now, we all believe in the principle that the Sefer Achinuch lays down as a premise for explaining many of the reasons of the 613 mitzvahs. And that is, Adam nif'al kefi pe'ulaso. A person acts, his actions affect him. Meaning, we don't only act as a result of what we're feeling, our actions can actually shape what we're feeling. It says this is the reason for many of the mitzvahs. The Chinuch draws on this. Many mitzvahs are meant to get you in a certain direction by getting you to act in that direction. Like, for example, a person gives tzedakah. Why? Because he feels mercy, right? But it's also the other way around. Let's say a person does not feel mercy, but we tell him, give tzedakah once a day, he will slowly start developing feelings of mercy and kindness. Because Adam nifal kafi pilulayz, not only do your actions result from who you are, your actions will also affect who you are. So therefore, when we're talking about dancing, refined dancing, disciplined dancing, can actually train a person to disciplined, balanced action. It can train a person to restraint. You train a person to overlook things. When you're controlling yourself, you're dancing, you're jumping, you're doing it in a refined, controlled way, not just letting go. It can actually help develop self-discipline. However, coarse forms of movement, quick, jerky, and street-like forms of movement can help develop a cheap, coarse personality, an impulsive personality, an unrestrained personality. Now, of course, these are not things that happen overnight, but these are things that ultimately can develop. Also, the way you move your feet when you're dancing makes an impact on the person's soul. Wild, loud music from which you hear foreign tones coming through, which expresses just emptiness and makes you jump in this just coarse and dizzying pace, brings upon a person feelings of abandon, of frivolity, and of just letting your yetzer flare up. And the other way around, refined music, which comes from pure sources, which also causes you to dance in a disciplined, refined, noble way, bring upon a person feelings of elevated yira.
So wouldn't maybe some, I don't know, breast lovers have an objection to this? Like, there is a form of, maybe it fits that description, but somehow, they're fine Jews too.
Okay, so the truth is, there's the practical level. There are also things, and this I'll go back to what I said before, that I don't know the sugya of music. That's why I chose to actually just read this. But in a very general way, there's a lot to the sugya. Like I said last week, Rav Nachman of Breslov really developed the sugya of music. And apparently, again, this is saying without, we're very clear. This we're schmoozing now. I'm not teaching things that I feel I could teach. But there was this concept by him of purifying music. I don't know what this means, but of taking music, let's say Dafka made a point, from what I understand, of taking music that came from other places and imbuing it with Kedusha by putting to it the words that he felt were appropriate. Now, this works, obviously, apparently, okay, there's such a thing. Where do you draw the line? I don't know. But still, we do have to know that today also, sometimes this music that you see, you have to look, is it really an elevated sort of activity? Or is it, these things aren't always true joy. Sometimes it's just, once again, a form of abandon that might come in a certain form of garb. I would imagine that with the phenomena you're talking about, as they say in Hebrew, yesh v'yesh. So, I'm certainly not qualified to give a clear-cut thing on it. I'm just giving a little bit of perspective on, it could be this way, it could be that way. You have to be aware of the issue.
It could be also why,
I'll just add that I have seen certain tunes that you see people dancing to in the streets that I don't think that I know some elder Breslov Chassidim, not of the modern strain. I can't see them dancing to these things. It's not just a given that you can take any form of music and I don't know.
It could be why, the Uman experience phenomena attracts all types, like very serious to a wild abandon. class of people. Like, it's
true.
Very.
I don't want to address a contemporary phenomenon with which I'm not aware. Why should I say things without knowing? But on the principle level, you have to be aware of these issues. You have to know that there's an approach to music, and that yes, music, when it's done in a coarse way, actually will cause coarseness. He says, the Slonim Rebbe, in his Sefer Nesivos Shalom, says as follows. He says, there are two types of dancing. There is dancing, as we described before from the Kuzari, where dancing is an outpouring of feelings that are flowing over, right? Where it begins in the mind and heart and spills out to the feet, which just get caught up with the excitement that the mind and heart feel. This is, it says, the Gra in Simchas Torah. The Gra was a very serious person. It wasn't the type you would hear a joke from. It says, the Gra in Simchas Torah, Nechalkel Mephazes Bechol Ois. He would bounce up and down. Right? I think we discussed this back then. That really, a person should be overflowing with excitement over the opportunity he has to serve Hashem. Just throughout the year, you're not supposed to be bouncing around. You're supposed to act with Ema, Yira, etc., right? Well, you're told once a year, just let it out. And by the Gra, this came pouring out in the force of bounding up and down. Yeah, yeah. Now.
He's pouring the time to.
What's that? Yeah, that too, yeah. So that's one form of dancing. And there's a different form of dancing where it's the other way around. The person feels numbed right now. I don't feel very excited. Okay, so what do? I want to excite myself, I want to inspire myself, so I begin dancing, I start jumping, and that external activity can also affect, as we saw, actions can go in both directions. You can try to bring yourself to a state by those external actions. You'll bring yourself to that state of happiness, etc., of enthusiasm by dancing. That's why it was one of my rabbis advised, walking to Shacharis, walk with a bounce in your step. It'll give you a better feeling about Shacharis. Now, if you don't do it automatically. There are other people who automatically walk with a bounce in their step. Great people, going to Shacharis, how exciting. But you can do the other way around. I don't feel it, right? This is the famous Yisoid of the Mesiyas Yishan, Kitsanius Mereres and Saprimius. You use the externals. This is another very valuable way to use dancing.
What about if music is like something shtiyot, but it's something which it's not treif, and it doesn't.
This is what we're talking about. Yeah, you can use just plain music.
But I'm talking about music that's more than just plain. I'm talking about music which is based on nothing. It's taking the name of a rabbi and changing it to this. I'm just saying that let's say it does inspire one to put one in a good mood.
Well, if you need to be put into a good mood, you can sing also A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You can even sing Mary Had a Little Lamb. It doesn't really matter, as long as the words are not negative words. Sometimes, though, we might say that saying, like you said before, sometimes saying holy words in a funny way might be a little sacrilegious. I don't know, but you have to be done the gufei shalinyan. But again, if the point is to inspire yourself through the tune, so that's what you're doing. Until you reach a situation, he says, so you work backwards, you work from the outside in. That's another powerful and valuable way to use dancing. You reach a situation of all of my limbs declare Hashem, who is like you. And if we know that voice, davening out loud, can enhance kavana, so certainly dancing and singing can enhance a person's inner feeling, can wake you up and to bring you to true inner simcha. The Brisker Rav actually showed a choice that dancing can actually show submission to Hashem. How's that? Because he said it's interesting. He said that if you look in the way dancing is expressed in the psukim, it's always that someone is dancing for someone else. This is very interesting. You see the psukim, whenever the psukim talk about someone dancing, it's someone dancing for someone else. For example, David mefazes u'mechalkel lifnei Hashem. It says what we said about before about the Vilna Gaon. It says about David. David was bouncing and jumping before Hashem. You're dancing. What are you doing? In a sense, this is another very interesting twist on it. Dancing, in a sense, you're letting go of your dignity. Right? What do you say? You know what I'm doing now? I'm dancing just to show Hashem that I'll do anything for him. Right? dance up and bounce up and down. Now, he says, there were many G'dolim who went on and on about the importance of true Jewish dancing, to the extent that they actually learned Musar and lessons from dancing that can be implemented in Avodas Hashem. For example, the Rebbe the Rashab of Lubavitch said, I learned an important principle in Avodas Hashem from dancing. What's that? He said as follows. He said, you see that the weaker people will leave the circle before the song is finished. But it doesn't ruin the circle, because the way the circle works is that people step out and people step in. And the circle keeps going. Sometimes, you know, it has ebbs and flows, but the circle keeps going. Because a circle is not the individual, but it's a klal. There's a klal, there's a robin dancing, and then the individual can step in and out. He won't necessarily affect the circle. Okay, when you have one of these situations where there's three people dancing, okay, fine. What are you talking about? You know, there's a proper simcha. The circle is there, and you come in and out. There are ebbs and flows, right? So he says, from this we learn that yes, individuals might fall, but the tzibur won't fall. Hold on to the tzibur. Also, so not just that, but singing, that dancing together can actually connect people, can cause a feeling of camaraderie. And not only that, he makes an interesting point here. Dancing can influence another person. When a person is dancing with a person of a higher level, dancing itself, holding hands the way the Jewish people do it, dancing in a circle, there's a certain electricity. Spiritual or emotional electricity that goes through dancing with a person might bring you closer to him and his level than just sitting with him. It can actually elevate you. And the Abter Rebbe of Yisrael inferred this from the concept of Macholis. Okay, we're gonna finish out. Just move toward the end of the. See, he just continued. Just move on to his conclusion. What's his bottom line that he's saying here? He's saying, "So, dear teachers," right? He's writing this to his staff. "Dear teachers, our purpose is to teach daughters of Israel to march with gaiva, with pride, on the well-beaten path that we have been going upon throughout all the generations, without veering off at all, without any adjustments, without any tweaks, without any innovations, because we really just have one purpose in everything we teach. Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha. That's the objective. And therefore, just as it's important to ensure that clothing doesn't start following the cheap street fashions, we also have to make sure that the music and the dancing is protected from innovations, from deviations, improvements, which can actually just take down and harm their perfection and their purity. Because yes, singing and dancing, music, certainly can be subject to the issue of Vaitelchu Bechukos HaGoy, don't follow the styles of the Goyim. Don't let your music express what it expresses by the Goyim. The dancing, which the Chinuch writes about, the purpose of this mitzvah is to distance ourselves from the Goyim and to consider the way they act with disgust. This just brings us closer to them. And therefore, he says, be very sensitive to songs. If you sense a foreign note coming out of them, or dancing in which the movements express coarseness, streetness, okay, frivolity, be very sensitive to this. But okay, we basically got to the end.